Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
Let's continue our conversation about Israel and Palestine. Please welcome senior writer at The Intercept, Murtaza Hussein, and staff writer at The Atlantic, Yair Rosenberg. Please welcome them. Very rarely do you get a standing ovation for the guests, but clearly they think, Muslim and Jew sitting next to each other? How can that be? But thank you both for being here. You are both, obviously, you're American writers that write a lot about the Middle East. The peace plan, the Stewart plan, as I call it, the Me Too plan, and Murtaza, we'll start with you. How unrealistic is that? It's similar to a 2002 Arab League resolution. Why? Why can't this happen?
Well, you know, it's not a bad idea. And on paper...
We're going to cut there. Thank you so much, Murtaza. So appreciate that.
Well, you know, I think the problem is, I write about U.S. foreign policy, especially in the Middle East, and I feel that the consistent theme here is that when we give blank checks to countries which are clients or partners, we enable their worst tendencies or their worst behaviors. In this case, you know, you mentioned the Arab peace plan. In 2002, the Arab League offered Israel full political, economic, diplomatic normalization in exchange for the main crux of it is creating a Palestinian state in the 1967 borders, which is in line with international law and so forth.
Right.
They've reiterated,
and a repatriation plan, which...
Which can be negotiated, the details of it, but that was the crux of it. And, you know, they've reiterated this plan many, many times, including recently. And it's not just the Arab world, the broader Muslim world as well, too. I interviewed the Pakistani ambassador to the UN a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. He told me that Pakistan, Indonesia, other large population Muslim countries would be willing to normalize with Israel, but they do not want the Palestinians to be thrown under the bus. There needs to be a two-state solution, in their view, creating a state in those lines. Without that, they cannot be. But the Israeli government has never responded to this deal. It's not even rejected. It's refused to engage. And I think the main reason is because they have the U.S. as a guarantor. Whatever they do, they'll have a superpower backing. And many people in Israel want the West Bank. And the Israeli government, Benjamin Netanyahu, has bragged that he's stop the Palestinian state from coming into existence. And because they have this backing, they don't need to compromise with their neighbors or engage with their neighbors substantially.
Do you think the U.S. backing of that enables this reticence?
I think the U.S. putting itself in this position, not just this position, many other situations where it acts as a blank check writer for its clients, it enables these situations.
Well, we got to make money somehow. And without selling weapons, what are we going to fall back on? Wheat? Come on. Yeah, you probably have a slightly different interpretation of that peace plan and also what we laid out here. So,
yeah. Well, I think that, the idea is actually a pretty good one, which is the idea of put some third party in between these two parties.
That's what seems like has to happen.
That would then be sort of like the, you know, the referee. The problem is that, while you, as you showed in your monologue, the Arab states are willing to talk a big game. The United States, and sometimes, depending on the administration, will also talk a big game. But no one actually wants to put their own troops down there. Can you imagine America under Democratic presidents who are retrenching from the Middle East, right, trying to get out of the forever wars? Or Donald Trump, who wants to turn America into some sort of isolationist country, get us out of, you know, stops helping Ukraine, right? They're not going to stick Americans there, right? The Arab countries, no different. They'll you know, give a token amount of money and then try to, like, you know, make it go away. And so that's, I think, the fundamental flaw here. I will say that if you took away U.S. backing and said, Israelis, we're going to put some other people on your border, particularly, say, Arab states, and they're going to be the guarantors of your security, the Israelis wouldn't say, well, I guess we don't have the Americans. We're just going to pack it up.
Right.
Because this is a country.
Nobody's going anywhere.
Yeah. And also, this is a country that's full of people, right, who fled other countries, including those Arab countries, because they were persecuted, right, killed, dispossessed. Right. There's like, you know, half of Israelis right. are now Middle Eastern origin.
But two diasporas don't make a right.
Of course
and
not.
It's, you know,
but
it's,
they won't,
it's the
they
kind
won't
of
trust
thing that. But let me push back on both of these for just 1 second. So and this just pushes back on both. You know, we get into this litigation of, well, the Palestinians and the Arab state, they propose something very reasonable to the Israelis, but the Israelis wouldn't do it. And the Israelis say, well, we don't have a partner for peace. And we propose something very reasonable, but they didn't do it. Doesn't it appear that no party is incentivized to fix this at the peril and detriment to the Palestinian people? And here's what I mean by that. Egypt has its border closed to the Palestinians. These are autocratic states in the Arab world. They all view the creation of Israel as a humiliation. If that's where they start from, it's a very easy kind of issue to deflect attention from your own dictatorships, to own the so-called Arab street with anger towards Israel. But the Saudis, they all do business together. Aren't they disincentivized to fix this? Netanyahu, whenever he gets in political trouble, suddenly there's a war. So who is incentivized to actually fix this, and isn't the people who really suffer from all of it, just the Palestinians, who get no regard from any group, no real support?
You know, I think that was the case for some time, but I think that things have changed in the sense that the Arab countries are very eager to get this off their plate, actually. That's why they had this Arab Peace Initiative and keep reiterating it, because they no longer want to have a conflict with Israel. It's not in their interest. They'd like to move past it, but they cannot do so in a way which ignores the Palestinians. And I think that the idea of the Abraham yeah. Accords, for instance, was let's just sidestep this issue and make deals with the Emiratis and Saudis and so forth. I was in Saudi Arabia recently, and I was talking to a broad range of people. I think the idea that the Saudis will make a deal with Israel without a two-state solution or meaningful pathway to one or significant concessions on that subject is very unrealistic because...
No, that's my point,
yes.
is the two-state solution. But if nobody is there to just guarantee, everybody has preconditions for everything. You know, Netanyahu, I need a partner. If you don't meet these certain conditions of no violence, I won't negotiate with you. Well, America occupied Iraq, and there was violence there the entire time. I mean, imagine if we had set a precondition that there'd be no Iraqi government unless, you know, this violence would end. Nothing would ever. It seems like nobody's actually being honest or genuine in the region about their aims.
I would put it a little differently, which is to say that the people who are running
the show... That's why you're a scholar and I'm a comedian.
We'll see when it's done. The people who are running the show for some time, which is how we arrive at this disastrous destination, are these absolutist actors who they might say that we'll negotiate and here's a condition and here's, you know, whatever. They might say that to some people, but in practice we see from, you know, many years of Netanyahu governance, every single document and statement, as you showed, of, you know, people from Hamas, right? These are people who want everything. Right, they see half of the people in the land as the problem, right? And then the question is how you
negotiate. The absolutists.
Yeah, the absolutists.
Okay.
And then there are lots of people who are also pragmatists, and that's how we had a peace process that failed. But there were genuine majorities in the polls at the time among Israelis and Palestinians behind negotiations for two states. And so there always are those people. They might be a minority, they might be a majority at a given point in time during a war. Right now, they're a minority, right? But there's always those people who say this is not going to be solved with weapons. We need to find a way to live together. But we're not supporting those people.
How could it ever be solved if the United States and Israel, the two, let's face it, most hated entities in that part of the world, are the ones responsible for the peacekeeping effort? It doesn't make any sense.
If the
Arabs don't step in, if the Arab nation's there, and couldn't you say that this was a great bulwark against the strength of Iran? Couldn't you convince UAE and Saudis that the only way to temper Tehran is by forming this alliance and recognizing them?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You mentioned that the U.S. stance in the region is very unpopular. I think it's related to this issue. This is the core issue of why the U.S. has not had normal relations with the Arab world and Muslim world generally. It's a very bitter and symbolic issue for a lot of people.
We do have normal relations. Well, we sell more weapons to the Saudis than we do to the Israelis.
On a public level, or like, you know, only with dictators, for instance. The reason that democracy is very skeptical in the Arab world, we're afraid that regimes which are mad at us will come to power. But I think the main issue, I think from a U.S. perspective primarily, is that we're involved in this very bitter conflict. We're not taking it seriously in solving it. We take a very one-sided approach, I think. And we do that supposedly in Israel's interest, but I think what it does in reality is prolong the conflict indefinitely to everyone's detriment. I'd come to the position that we should either be fair in this conflict and adjudicate it in a way which is fair and results in a just solution both sides accept, or we should leave. We should leave because it's impacting us in very, very negative ways. Militarily, economically, strategically, we have other problems in the world to deal with as well, too. And I believe that if the U.S. were to pull what I'd say is a blank check from Israel, it would incentivize Israel to compromise more. Because ultimately, Israel has to live in the Middle East. That's where the country is. That's where the people are going to be. There are neighbors who are willing to compromise with us.
We could move them to Maine. Maine is wide open. They could play tennis.
Right.
But I hear your point. But to that, I do think that the idea that this is all about the United States, that we are the actor that drives all that, I think plays into a myth of United States control. And I think if we've learned anything in these last 20 to 30 years of the United States is we've got big influence, but we sure as hell don't have control. And I'm not so sure that by the U.S. changing its policy in certain ways, that solves this. What's your thought on that?
Yeah, well, I mean, John, that's a very controversial thing to say that the United States is not the main character of the entire planet.
Then I'm going to say you said it, and I didn't say it. That was him.
Okay. You know, because, you know, this is not live, so maybe we'll cut that.
Yes, exactly.
But that is clearly the case. There is this sort of sense that a lot of people have that the United States and the president of the United States in particular have the ability to sort of wave a magic wand and solve these things. If they could, there are multiple American presidents who would have done so. And they would have changed the policies, and they would have tried, and there were always people in different factions of the State Department, and they tried different things. You go back to Eisenhower and Nixon, they all had plans, right? And they pressured Israel in ways that, you know, presidents today don't. Right? But there's a reason why we moved in different directions, because they thought maybe if we are more involved. And one thing I want to say to this, though, is that a lot of people want to see a solution in the Middle East, but they also want to see the U.S. get out of the Middle East. And those two things are in contradiction. And people are ultimately going to have to make choices about what the U.S. does and doesn't do. And
but you
I don't
have
necessarily have the answer to
and
that.
And not be so involved in the region. I do think if there is, to your point, if the Arab states form a more broader alliance with Israel in a genuine way, and that the United States wouldn't feel maybe that it had to be on the line there. Listen, I'm no fan of any of it. I think this cycle of violence over the 75 years is destroying the dreams of two peoples. Not just the Palestinians. I think it's destroying the dream of the Israeli people as well. And so I think that what we're doing now clearly and what we've been doing is a cycle that we have to pull out of. And I imagine, you know, that's the thing that ultimately has to happen.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S., That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
We're talking to Murtaza Hussain and Yair Rosenberg, and we talked a little bit about some of the things that could help break the cycle of violence in the Middle East. You know, the act of the two of you sitting here having this conversation is almost rebellious or revolutionary in the current moment. How do you counsel Americans in this moment to be able to, you know, not lose so many Facebook friends when it comes to all this? Is there any advice that you guys have?
I'll take that first.
Well, the backstory of the two of us is that we've been having these conversations for something like 10 years. And the further backstory is that we reached out to each other on Twitter because we both realized that we shared a lot in common about how we approach the world, but we had very different opinions on issues like these. And that's how we became friends some 10 years ago, is it?
That's like that, yeah.
And so... We've been doing this over, you know, in kosher restaurants because for Sunni Muslims, many of them, kosher meat is halal. And so I will take Murtaza to a kosher restaurant, introduce him to it, and then we'll have conversations like these. And John is just, you know, interloping, you know, just sort of, you know, we decided to
I'm
let him come.
Up the check.
There we go. And what it is, we refuse to allow ourselves or our communities to be held hostage to a ruinous conflict thousands of miles away that we may never be able to fully resolve or fix.
Right.
But we can have an impact about how we treat each other here. And the other thing, you know, I would say is that we both are both journalists, and one of the things that motivates us is our pursuit of truth and what is true. And we share that even when we disagree. It's because we came to different conceptions and we really believe the other is honest.
Yeah, it's well said. Well, you know, ultimately, as Yair mentioned, we're journalists, and, you know, we seek out people's perspective who are different from you, who see from a different world, see the world from a different view, and then that's how you learn about the world a little bit. And I think I have to say that it's easier for us, too, though, because we're not Israeli and not Palestinian, ultimately. We're American, and
we
view it that way. You know, both of us know people whose family members have been killed recently, many dozens in some cases, in Gaza recently. And, you know, that emotional component, you can compartmentalize it when you're not so directly involved. So we look at it to an American perspective, two different sides of this issue in some sense, but we're able to have that conversation, which is constructive. What I would say, you know, I could accept any Palestinian's view or any Israeli's view when they're so intimately involved in it, but I can never respect a bloodthirsty American. That's the only person I cannot respect. So, you know,
I have said this for many years. One of the biggest issues I have with American foreign policy is how cavalier it is about the destruction that so many of our policies have had internationally. Even something as simple as, you know, we had a big issue here with burn pits with Iraqi war veterans and Afghan war veterans. And we talked a lot about getting them the help they need here. But the thing nobody ever talked about was what those did to the environment in Iraq and Afghanistan. We left, and I think our policies oftentimes are cavalier to the destruction that occurs.
I have a report from Iraq, and I met so many people whose family members were killed by the U.S. military or by the violence that took place in that time. Also, very elevated rates of cancer and other indirect causes of the war.
Sure.
And it's kind of forgotten, actually. Those people, their lives go on, but, you know, the impact that we had in a very cavalier moment, you know, to us, we kind of, the news cycle moves on. So, but, you know, those memories stay, and it impacts our ability to operate there or how we're viewed there in the future. So it's something which, you know, it's made me very pessimistic about U.S. foreign policy in the sense that I know many, at the end of the Cold War, there was an optimistic view we can make the world a better place. I think that's true in some cases, but I'm a lot more hesitant to get the U.S. deeply involved because there's a very negative track record.
I think there's a mythology around sort of the Marshall Plan. And it's that, you know, after World War II, we say, oh, well, we were in war with Germany and Japan, and we threw a bunch of money at it, and now we're the best of friends, and they buy our cars, and we buy their cars, and it's all lovely, and all it takes is a little bit of money and some American know-how, and we can turn the world into allies. I think we might have learned the wrong message from all that.
I'd also say, from reporting around the world myself, when you talk to people, this can have the wrong impact. If you have a great mythology about yourself and how you fix all the world's problems, then some people will say, how can the Americans not fix this problem? And they'll like, notice.
Wait, they believe us?
People believe us.
Son of a.
And I will say to them, actually, there are a tremendous number of incredibly well-meaning people serving our country, trying to do this stuff. It's just really hard.
Right.
But there's a certain story that we've told, and sometimes people really expect us to make good on it. And there are impossible promises that we can't keep.
How do you guys negotiate this pragmatic view within your own families? Because I know within, you know, there is no, I can't get five Jews to agree on anything at dinner. Like, how do you negotiate that within your own families?
You know, I think there's the personality type that tries to really hear where people are coming from and speak
to... How do you get one of those in your family?
Sheer dumb luck, or your dad is a rabbi, in my case.
Right.
You know, and so that's what you do as the rabbi, right? And you're trying to understand where everyone in the audience is coming from. Your synagogue can be diverse, and there are people with different political and ideological perspectives. And how do you tell them the truth and stay true to that, while also saying, you know, speaking to each of them?
Right.
And so, yeah, it's a type of personality. You see it in different, there are different kinds of political leaders and spiritual leaders who manage to do this. And there are others who feel like, what's the hardest, sharpest, best viral slogan I can use on Twitter, right, to own the other side.
Right.
And by the way, when we were younger, I mean, I'll speak for you, we were like that.
I was much more hot-headed when I was younger.
Really?
Yeah, when we first met.
You guys seem the opposite of hot-headed. Like, it's...
We aged a lot.
I feel like I want this as my screensaver. Like, this is so calming to me that I... what about you? Same. So let me ask you guys this thing, because that brings up an interesting point. What mitigated the rashness? Was it just youth? What got you guys less visceral?
Yeah, I think getting older is one aspect of it. But then also, you know, reading a lot of books, trying to see other people's perspectives, travel, that has a big impact on things. Keeping open mind, trying to treat others consistently as you want to be treated, keeping that golden rule in mind as well, too. Also, you know, you mentioned family. It's interesting because I've had conversations with family. I have family very spread out over the world. And, you know, certain experiences can be very resonant with people. I had an uncle who lives in Pakistan. And, you know, he was very critical of the U.S. war in Afghanistan. He thought that it was very, very bad. He said a lot of things. He visited Kabul, and that's kind of what put this in his mind. He said, well, look, there's nothing is being built here. It's all falling apart. They didn't make anything good from their presence here. It's just very exploitative. And then he actually visited New York one day, and he visited the subway system, and he's like, oh, now I get it, actually. It's not there on purpose. They just can't do it, actually. So, you know, there are moments like that.
That's hilarious.
This is where we're getting to the jokes portion, which is hard in this topic.
Very hard.
And like people ask me, like, how do I conceptualize? Like, Hamas has, what is the New York Times has, 350 to 450 miles of tunnels underneath Gaza. And it's like, to think of it this way, it would cost New York City $648 quadrillion over 268 years to build that much tunnel.
Right.
You know, it's just a really large
number. Well,
they
would just raise the price to $1.50 a ride. And then that's
problem solved.
$2 a ride. I appreciate you both so much for coming on and having the conversation, and really just admire both of you, not just for having this conversation, but your journalism as well. It's really fantastic stuff. So thank you both. Murtaza Hussain and Yair Rapoport.
Explore more shows from The Daily Show podcast universe by searching The Daily Show wherever you get your podcasts. Watch The Daily Show weeknights at 11, 10 Central on Comedy Central, and stream full episodes anytime on Paramount Plus.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives.
Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.